Are looking at God's wild kingdom tonight. This is a picture from a couple of years ago. Well, quite a few years ago, actually. I look quite a bit younger, don't I? All right. We're talking about loyalty. We gave you these things, and I encourage you to jot these things down in the memory verse. I won't review the memory verse from last time. I'm going to give you another memory verse tonight that you can work on. And the last one I gave you was quite long, so I'm going to give you another long one because you enjoyed the long one. But it's one you probably know. We talked about loyalty is adjusting my schedule to meet the needs of those that I am serving. And we talked about the great horned owl and Amasa's loyalty. Proverbs 27:1, boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. And then last week, standing with those that I'm serving in their time of need. Standing with those I'm serving in their time of need. Can anybody tell me the memory verse from last week? Ooh. Emma? Amen. Good job, Emma. She didn't quote it, but she read it. But that's all right. That's all right. Let me throw that back. Look at that. Oh, almost made it. That was a curveball. Otherwise, it would have got to you. And what was the animal we talked about last week? Listen. What? The goose. Did somebody say aardvark? Here you go, Liz. Boy, I'm missing everybody tonight. All right. And who was the Bible character we talked about? We already answered one. I'm going to get somebody else. Maybe. Mordecai. These are meant to be. Mordecai. That's the way. Now, the person tonight, my wife and I have a debate going on about how to pronounce his name. So we'll tell you who that is in a little bit. Tonight, we're looking at loyalty again. And loyalty is being a reliable messenger to those I am serving. Being a reliable messenger to those whom I am serving. Now, this verse I picked out, you're going to see how it applies later into the message tonight. But right up front, it might not look like it fits good, but it is a good verse. And probably every parent here has at least tried to teach their children to memorize this verse. You want to guess what it is? Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. Read the verse with me. Ephesians 6, 1 and 2. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. Ephesians 6, 1, it's actually 1 and 3. I wrote that down wrong. It's verse number 1 through 3, isn't it? I think that is. Sometimes I get the references wrong, and I didn't double-check that before I wrote it on the slide up there. Well, tonight we're going to talk about a Bible character. The sons and the daughters of a great man were given unusual instructions by him before he died. They were to live by these instructions and pass them to their children. Generations later, these instructions became the basis for an urgent message to an entire nation. We're going to find out who that person is in a little bit. But first, we're going to look at something in the world of God's creation. And some of you are going to get hungry when you see this. What is that? Honey! And where does honey come from? It comes from a bee. Any kind of bee, it comes from the Fritzy bee. You wonder why I'm not embarrassed about anything? Because that's a family vehicle I grew up with when I was a teenager. I don't get embarrassed about anything, all right? Lived with hand-me-downs, and that's the car that picked us up from school and whenever. Didn't bother me. But that's the old Fritzy bee. If anybody knows our family, you know what that's all about. Let's see. We're talking tonight about the honeybee. By the way, there's alternate ways to spell this. Sometimes it's one word, sometimes it's two words. Most of the time you see it as one word, but it is proper to spell it as one word or two words. This is an amazing animal. To be quite honest with you, I know a little about a honeybee. When I see a bee, I'm out of here. I don't really care for them. I'm not necessarily afraid of them, but I don't want to spend a lot of time around them. But there are some amazing things. Most of what I've learned about honeybees, I've learned by reading them. In fact, just in the last couple of days, I've learned a tremendous amount about these honeybees that I want to consider more. Is there anybody here that's ever been a beekeeper or worked with a beekeeper? Anyway, you have? Is that at camp or the bed and breakfast? That's right. They have beehives up there. I've talked to a number of people that do that, and I just kind of, I don't know. You can have them. I'll take the honey. You can have the bees, okay? But they are an amazing animal, and I have some pictures that I've taken of them. One time, this one is taken early spring. I can tell because of the flower that it's on. But some fun facts about the bee. First of all, they have five eyes. We don't call them four eyes. They have five. And they have six legs. That makes them an insect. They have two pairs of wings. A beehive can have over 50,000 bees living inside of it. That's a crowded quarters, isn't it? And only the females have stingers. Remember that, guys. Only the female bees have stingers. And if they use their stinger, they die. Or if they lose their stinger, if you pull it off, they're going to die. The foragers collect nectar from about 2 million flowers. And they have a little pouch in their back leg that they put that nectar in and fly from the flower back to the hive and so on. And they have an average forager in its lifetime, entire lifetime of a bee that goes out and collects nectar from the flowers. Of course, they pollinate the flowers in the process of doing this. They forage enough to produce 1/12 of a teaspoon of honey in its entire lifetime. So every teaspoon of honey that you gulp, it's gone. That took 12 bees to find the nectar for that honey. They're an amazing animal. There's three kinds of classifications of bees inside the hive, and some of you may know more about this than I do. I'm kind of ignorant of this, but I have become fascinated in recent days. These are the three classifications of bees, if you can see them up there. Inside of a colony, say of 50,000 bees, there's one queen bee. And then there's about 100 drones inside that hive. The rest of them, almost 50,000 of them, are worker bees. Now, let me talk about them for just a few moments, and I'm going to spend a lot of time on this. So I'm just going to give you some things that I most of this I've just recently learned. I've heard people talk about it, but haven't really paid a lot of attention to it, to be quite honest with you. A queen has only one purpose, and that is to produce more bees. That's all. That's the only thing she lives for, Mama. That's all that queen lives for. In fact, she's the mother of just about every bee in that hive. After a larvae hatches, that is a larvae of a queen bee, as it's in the larvae stage, we call her a princess, I guess, she desires to kill any competitors. Sounds like a little Barbie, doesn't she? And these virgin bees, when they do develop into bees, they leave the hive to mate with other bees. And they mate with drones in the open air. And if they survive, and most of the drones don't find the mama and the virgin queen bee, and they end up dying without ever mating. And the survivors, the queens that do survive and are successfully mated with a dozen or so drones, they will organize their own hive. Now, the queen bee will live 5 or so years. And think of this. In those 5 years, that's just kind of the average from what I understand, every day she releases 2,000 fertilized eggs every single day of her life. You think you had it rough with 4, 5, 6 kids, huh? And then the drone bees. The drone bees are the males. There's only about 100 of them. Their main purpose is to breed with the queens. from other hives. Of course, they don't breed the queens from their hive. They breed with other queens. They go out in a party and find other girls in town. But most of them do not succeed in breeding. And they that do succeed, as soon as they're done breeding that one time with that new queen, virgin queen bee, they drop dead. That was it. That was their only purpose in life. That was it. Some people I know live that way. By the way, if you want to, I don't know where this statement ever did, tell your kids about the birds and the bees. If you tell your children about procreation with people and you use bees for an illustration, they're going to leave more confused than they ever thought possible. There's nothing there that even relates to human procreation. But the worker bees, that's the majority of the bees. They're the ones that we're used to seeing. These are the female bees. The only males are the drones. The females are the worker bees. And, of course, the ladies got to do all the work, right? Yeah, that's the way it ought to be. They have many tasks in life. They have a very long resume for a very short life. They only live a little over a month long. But they accomplish a lot of things in that short time. They have a long resume, but a very short life to fulfill all those things. They start off life, when they first become a bee inside the hive, by cleaning their cell. And the queen will inspect that cell. If it's not cleaned good enough, she's got to go back and clean it again. You've got to do it right. You've got to make your bed before you leave your room. All right? That's her first purpose in life. That's a good lesson for young people to learn, isn't it? Until you clean your cell, you can't go on to the next thing. And then the next thing they do is they work in the nursery. They take care of other bees. They produce wax. They build the honeycomb or repair the honeycomb. They feed the drones. Here's these worker bees. The drones just sit around and burp and everything else. There's not that many of them, but the worker bees got to feed them. They're too lazy to feed themselves. They only have one purpose in life, and that's not to work. And then they also attend the queen. They take care of the queen. All she does is have babies, one after another, more than can be numbered. And I guarantee you she doesn't bother naming any of them. All right? And then they also are mortuary bees. When something dies, another bee or one of the larvae dies, they have to discard the body to get it out of the hive. They carry water into the hive. They fan the hive by cool. They're the air conditioning system. They sometimes will be in the hive just flapping the wings, causing a breeze to cool the hive down. They are the guards of the hive. They repair the hive if there's any damage ever done, and they protect it from intruders, and of course they have a stinger on them, and once they use that stinger they're going to die. So they try to use that sparingly, but they will very freely give their life to protect those that they're caring for. And then they become they go through these different stages all in their short lifetime. And then they become foragers, where they go out and they collect nectar to make honey out of. And again, they put that nectar in the pouch in their back leg and bring it back. And you think how small that bee is, how small that leg is. And they're back and forth all the time. Then the last thing they do in their lifespan is to serve as scouts. They get too tired of carrying stuff, so they just go out and find stuff and come back and report on what they find. Well, how does a bee demonstrate to us loyalty? And loyalty, and this is maybe the most amazing thing to me about the bee, and from what I understand of them, loyalty, again, is being a reliable messenger to those I am serving. The communication that a bee shares with those inside the hive. You look inside of a beehive, it looks like a mess. I know that we've taken people up to, what's that nature center up in Byron, at the park? Byron Forest Preserve. Last time we were there, they had some trouble. I think the queen might have died, but they were having some trouble. They were trying to get a new queen because there was nothing in there when I took the kids up there last time. But they have a beehive there that has a glass side that you can actually see. You don't have to worry about getting stung. They have a tunnel that they go in and out of. and it's all enclosed, but you can watch them working. And you look in there and think, all this activity, how does anybody know what's going on? Looks like total chaos to me. But they are a model of what communication is all about. They are truly a reliable messenger to the one that they're serving. They're all of them, their purpose is to serve the queen. And they're a messenger from the queen. They have some unique ways in which they communicate. And one of those ways is when a forager or a scout goes back and finds pollen or finds nectar that he can bring back to, or she can bring back to make honey with. How do they give directions? Well, you put in this location on your GPS and you find it. That to me is just fascinating how they do it. And I've actually watched videos of this and read a number of things about it. Some of you may have seen this. They have certain signals that they use. They come and they land and they say, hey guys, gather around. Let me tell you where the good stuff is. And everybody gathers around and starts watching. The first thing they do is show them the direction. Now, they don't have a compass that they carry in their pocket. Their only pockets for nectar. They go by the sun for directions. Now, the problem with that is the sun's always moving. So you got to go quick or the directions are going to be off. And they will face the direction once they get, you know, that to me is amazing. Get inside of that hive where they can't see the sun anymore and they know exactly where they've been. And they face the direction. If they were facing north, that first picture, or facing towards the sun, I'm sorry, they face directly up. And then they point the direction going by the sun. The sun is the top. And then if they're 60 degrees away from the sun, they point and they know where the sun is. Everybody can somehow tell where the sun is. And they point that direction. And they tell people that that's the direction. That's the angle. The direction that you need to go. Now, if you've ever tried to find a point from one spot and throw a rock maybe at one specific one, it's very difficult. I mean, it looks easy until you try to hit that exact spot. You think of finding a flower a half mile away. And it says, first of all, it's in that direction. That direction, your compass needs to be pointed exactly. I mean, with a hundredth of a degree from your starting point to where your finishing point is. And by the way, if their directions are not specific enough, the other bees that go there, they won't have enough energy. They didn't eat enough food to get any farther than where they have to go. They might drop dead if they miss their directions. If they don't get the directions exactly right, they only have just enough food to get there and just enough to get back. And unless they, if they somehow can't find it, if somebody picks that flower before they get there, they're going to either have to find something else or they're going to die before they ever get back to the hive. And then there's something even more amazing than showing the direction. How do they know how far they have to go? There's a little dance that they do. And there's some examples of the dance, the round dance, the waggle dance. This tells them exactly how far. And people that have studied them have shown videos of them doing this little dance. And when I think of a dance, and they call this the distance dance, the dance that the bee does. And I think of doing a bee dance is when you get a bee in your shirt or something. That's when I do a dance, but concerning a bee. But and then if there's danger to the hive, there's another interesting thing that takes place. If for some reason some kid throws a rock at that hive, or some animal tries to get in there, someone tries to get the honey out of that hive and damages that hive, every bee in that hive instantly knows there's something that needs their attention. And there's two ways of doing this, and I had no idea of this before. I'm kind of curious what it sounds like. But there's a mass communication where the queen can communicate with every bee in the hive instantly. They call it a moan that she lets off. And it's heard as a vibration that's heard all the way. And she instantly knows if somebody damages the outside of the hive, she instantly knows that there's something wrong. And she lets off this moan. And then the bees have an automatic, they don't have cell phones, but they can communicate directly with each other. And they know exactly what the other person's thinking. They know exactly where the attention needs to be. There's actually a chemical that's in them that when a bee carries, when a forager brings back some of the nectar, it injects some of this chemical, and that chemical is distributed throughout the whole hive, and all of them have it. So literally, their minds are all working in synchronization. And it's an amazing thing. The chemical is called Rex, look at pheromone. Is that how you say it? Rex looked like he knows what he's talking about. Some of you might know more about bees than I do. And I just learned all this, and it's just a fascinating thing. But their communication is beyond understanding, and their demonstration of being loyal by communicating properly. Now, we're going to look at a Bible character tonight. That's enough about the bees. And loyalty, again, is being a reliable messenger to those I'm serving. Can you imagine if that bee gives false information? If they didn't hear the message exactly right. But loyalty is getting the message right and delivering the message faithfully and accurately. And the Israelites, we're going to look at a Bible character tonight, but I'm going to show you a little background before we get into it. The Israelites, sometimes when we read the Bible, we think, well, it was Israel and then it was the rest of the world. There are many people that were not Israelites that were believers and followers of the God of Israel. For example, Moses, when he left Egypt, he went and kept the flock of Jethro. Jethro was a priest to the most high God. He was not an Israelite. Moses got his wife from Jethro. And they were called proselytes. They were worshipers of the true God, but they were not a part of the nation of Israel. One such man was a man named Jonadab that lived many years before the events. We're going to turn to Jeremiah 35 here in a little bit and read about his children. Jonadab was the son of Rechab. And I want to say Rechab. My wife says it's Rechab. So she's the queen bee, so she's right. All right? These people were not Israelites, but they lived among the Israelites. They were favorable to the Israelites throughout history. And much, really, almost all we know of them in the Bible is in Jeremiah 35. There's brief references other places in the Scripture about where they came from, who they are. But the story that's told in Jeremiah 35 sheds a lot of light on these people. Jonadab, who was the father of the Rechabites, had an unusual request for his children. You know, I look back at my childhood, and I heard my dad say many times when he grew up in what we think of a big city of Rockford, and it was not that big, probably about the size of Dixon when he grew up, I don't know. It wasn't that big of a city, but it's much larger now. And he decided growing up in town, well, on the edge of town, which is kind of in the middle of town now, or the neighborhood he grew up in, he decided when he has a family, he wants to raise them out in the country somewhere. And I'm so glad that he did that. And even where we grew up is not really much of out in the country anymore. But Jonadab understood this principle, and he thought one of the best ways to protect the coming generations of his family is to keep them out of the big city. Now, you can say what you will about that, but that was just the idea. In fact, he made and gave this request to his children. He requested four things of them. And we picture this old man on his deathbed giving his children these four requests, and they were faithful to keep it not only to them, but the next generation, and the next generation, and the next generation. They faithfully communicated the wishes of Jonadab, they were referred to as the Rechabites. Jonadab was a son of Rechab. And this was his request. I want you to see this. I'm just going to put this up here real quick. It's mentioned further down in this text. But the first request for the Rechabites by Jonadab, their father, was that they drink no wine. They were teetotalers. They were not supposed to drink any wine. Never to drink any wine. And then And again, they did this to keep themselves pure. And I believe personally that that means not only intoxicating wine or any fruit of the vine, which is literally what the wine is referring to. They're to drink no wine. And secondly, they're not to build any houses. They're never to build a house. And then thirdly, his request to them is that they're not to plant. They're not to plant any seed. They're not to plant any vineyards. They're just to live off the land. And then the fourth request is that they dwell only in tents. They not only are not to build houses, they're not to live in a house. They're to live their entire life in tents. These would be what we would call nomadic people. They have no permanent dwelling place. And they have no roots dug down anywhere. They're free to move about wherever need be. And this seems to be an unusual request made by Jonadab, the father of what became known as the Rechabites, or Rechabites, however I say it. I'm going to say it wrong every time now. Whenever I say it, I'm going to think my wife said it's like Rachel, all right? Rechabites. And they kept this request of dad, of grandpa, of great-great-grandpa, great-great-great-great-great-great-great, however many greats. I mean, generation after generation, they lived faithfully. These requests were passed down from one generation to the next. Now we come to Jeremiah chapter number 35, where we read about the Rechabites. And I want you to see, first of all, when we read about them, we're going to see their loyalty and what their loyalty meant and how God blessed them for their loyalty. First of all, I want you to see this, that the Rechabites' loyalty show us that they were faithful for generations. One generation after another, they kept the wishes of their father, their grandfather, the patriarch of their family. In verse number 1 of chapter number 35, it says, "The word of the Lord came into Jeremiah." Now, this is a long time. They've been going on for generations. Jeremiah was preaching to Judah just before the destruction of Judah, the destruction of Israel and Judah and Jerusalem. "The word of the Lord came unto Jeremiah from the Lord in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, saying, Go into the house of the Rechabites, and speak unto them, and bring them into the house of the Lord, into one of the chambers, and give them wine to drink." I want you to bring these children that are living in tents. They just moved to the city of Jerusalem. We'll show you why in a little bit. They've lived out in the wilderness, and now they've brought their tents into the city of Jerusalem. They're right out there. I want you to go out and get the whole lot of them and bring them into a chamber in the house of God and set wine before them. In verse number 5, he did as God told him. He said, "And set before the sons of the house of the Rechabites pots full of wine and cups. And I said unto them, Drink ye the wine." Now, this is an unusual thing, and you're going to see why God did this in a little bit. But these men now had a choice to make. Am I going to keep the wishes of my ancestors and pass these wishes down to future generations that I've lived by, that have been the code of conduct for my life? Or am I going to obey the man of God? That's an interesting dilemma when you think about it. They recognized Jeremiah as a great man of God. They would not want to disappoint him, but they would not want to disappoint their ancestors, their father. Their answer, and I want you to see this, they answered in one mind, one heart, one voice, truly in one accord. They didn't need time to think about it. This is a code of conduct they've lived by all their life. There was no discussion necessary. They didn't have to say, "Well, let's have a huddle over here and let's decide what we're going to do. This is a hard decision." No, it was an easy decision for them. And verse number 6, "But they said, We will drink no wine." Even though you're a man of God, even though you requested it of us, we're not going to do that. "For Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, commanded us, saying, Ye shall drink no wine, neither do your sons forever. Neither shall you build houses. It goes through the requests that their father, their ancestor, the patriarch of their family made. We've continually passed this message on from generation to generation, and we're going to keep going that direction. They were literally, what this is here, God is putting them to the test. God is giving them, putting them in a situation. By the way, God has unusual ways of testing us sometimes. He has very unusual ways to test our loyalty sometimes, and this would certainly fit into that category. How am I supposed to do it? In reality, their mind was made up. They had their heart set in doing what dad, what granddad, what the patriarchs have taught them, the communication that is passed down from generation to generation. There was no question in their mind. And now the man of God is testing them. And then, secondly, I want to show you this. In refusing to do what Jeremiah said, they proved themselves faithful and loyal to God. We know this because God used them as an example to the entire nation of Israel what loyalty is all about. Communicating a message from one generation to the next and being faithful to carry out the duties and responsibility that have been given to you. In verse number 12 through verse number 16 of Jeremiah 35, God explains how they're used as an example of what loyalty is all about. We end in verse number 16, that section of Scripture. And God says this, because the sons of Jonadab, the sons of Rechab, have performed the commandment of their father, which he commanded them, but this people hath not hearkened unto me. What he's doing here is using them as an illustration to the entire nation of Israel and telling Israel, you've been unfaithful. You've been disloyal to your patriarch, Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob. You've not obeyed like you were supposed to obey. You followed after false gods. You followed after false preachers. You followed after false prophets. You've gone every direction, and you've not kept the commandments from one generation to another. And God said, I want to show you an example of the Rechabites, how they were faithful and loyal to follow the command of their patriarch father. And we need to understand that as New Testament Christians, God's people could learn a lot from that. Our loyalty is first and foremost to the gospel of Jesus Christ as children of God. Galatians chapter number 1, verses 8 and 9, the Apostle Paul says, for though we or an angel or any other, or an angel from heaven, preach any other gospel to you that which we have preached, let him be accursed. And as we said before, we say unto you again, if any preach any other gospel unto you than that you have received, let him be accursed. I'm amazed at how easily God's people follow from one gospel to another gospel. One source of truth to another source of truth. This book is our source of truth. And the Rechabites were faithful to their patriarch father, who is a friend of the Israelites, and they've been a friend of Israel for all these generations, and they're not about to turn back on what they've been taught and what they've learned from one generation, what their father and their ancestors have faithfully passed down to them through their communication. And then the third thing about the Rechabites, and this is an amazing thing. Because of their lifestyle, because of the way they conducted themselves, they not only kept themselves pure from the sins, and by the way, the Israelites would have learned a lot from living the way the Rechabites did. Because they got settled down, and God warned them over, when you get settled down in this foreign land, you're going to start to pick up the practices of those around you. You're going to start to live like those around you. You're going to start to worship their gods. And they did exactly that. But the Rechabites didn't do that, because they were loyal to the command of their, you live in tent, you don't get settled, you don't put your roots too far down. When it's time to move, you're free to move. You're not established, you're not settled in this place. You can get out and you can be loyal and faithful to those whom you are serving, the God of your father. Because they had lived this lifestyle, now they were not normally living in the city of Jerusalem. They were there now, in Jeremiah 35, but they weren't normally there. Normally, they're out in the wilderness somewhere. They travel from one place to another. When they run out of pasture, they go to the next place. And because of their lifestyle, when Nebuchadnezzar began to invade the surrounding land, they knew Nebuchadnezzar was coming. It didn't take them much to pack up and move on to safety. And now they've come to the last place of safety, which was the city of Jerusalem. And God's using them for an illustration of being loyal and faithful to those you serve. In chapter number 35 and verse number 11, it says, "When it came to pass, when Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up the land and said, 'Come ye, let us go to Jerusalem and fear the army of the Chaldeans, for fear of the army of the Assyrians,' so we dwelt at Jerusalem." When they were on the way here, we came here. This is the last place of safety we have. Now it's up to God to protect us. We've done everything we could. We've been loyal to our fathers and our patriarchs, and this is the last place of safety we have. And then, this is even more amazing. God not only used them for an illustration of loyalty, but God especially made sure that these Rechabites would stay safe through Nebuchadnezzar's invasion. Israel was taken captivity. Judah was now gone into captivity. If you know the history of Nebuchadnezzar coming in and spoiling, destroying the city of Jerusalem, yet the Rechabites stayed safe. God blessed and continued to spare them. The last verse in this chapter: "Therefore, thus saith the Lord God of the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, Jonadab, the son of Rechab, shall not want a man to stand before me forever." They're still alive. God protected them. God spared them from destruction and death because they weren't bound to something outside of their original loyalty. The loyalty was to their patriarch, being a reliable messenger to those I'm serving. And much like the bee, if their message is distorted, they say, "You know, God said, our dad said we ought to do these five things. What if we just did three of them?" "Well, I know that we've done this for generation to generation. We passed this down from one generation to another. We've kept ourselves pure. We've kept ourselves in line with the will of God. But now this preacher, as much as we love him, as much as we respect him, he cannot even persuade me to go against the direction of God." Now again, I say this with reluctance because people that are disloyal will use this as a picture of disloyalty, but they were loyalty to their first relationship, the one that they dedicated their lives to, and they faithfully passed that message down from one generation to another. And as long as that message doesn't change, we stay faithful to that message. When someone tries to change that message, no matter how pure their motives, right, God might just be bringing somebody in to test us, to test our loyalty to Him, to test our dedication to Him. The Rechabites were an amazing people that illustrate what it is to be a reliable messenger to those that I am serving. Father, we pray.